White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 549.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. You are our Patreon.com family, and we appreciate you. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, it is late June of 2021. We are seeing the country opening back up again, more or less. I went to a big shopping mall in St. Louis today, and people didn't have masks on, including me, and that was awesome. Got to the Apple store, won't let you in without a mask still, but everybody else is okay. And it just feels like, responsible or not, I don't know, but it just feels like things are getting back to normal. And I tell you what, it's really going to feel that way when we see Jordan-Hare Stadium filled up full of people in orange and blue in just a few couple of short months.
It's not far away.
No.
I mean, you know, September 4th, not far away.
It's crazy to think it. Yeah, it's almost the end of June. Get through July, get through August, get through the barbecue show, get through, the fall camp, as they say.
We only get through in 2 days and 3 days and get out there and run around and have some wolf sign on the ground and work them and make them young boys become men. And that's what I'm looking forward to is seeing the seeing that team back out there and seeing what they've become.
75 days from now is kickoff, man.
Wow. Nice math save there. That reminded me, though, when I said that, you know, I've just been steeped in Pat Dye for the last month or so. I've been doing so much research into the 1980s, and I just love, I probably mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again, if I did. I just love, everybody remembers, you know, the 89 first time ever game where he said, "I watched you grow, men. I watched you wrestle with them angels and them demons, and I watched you become men. I watched you become men." Well, and that was like heartfelt, meaningful, just from the bottom of his heart, right? And then in an interview a couple of days later, somebody asked him about going to the Hall of Fame Bowl, and he says, "If we'd become men sooner, we'd be in the Sugar Bowl." Like, there's Pat Dye. There's Coach Dye. There's Coach Dye. I knew he was out there somewhere, so yeah. I like to think that he's looking over me, typing away here, and he's going, "Oh, that's a good quote. Yeah, throw that one in there. That's good. That's good." So that's cool. I hope it serves as a good guy. You know what? We need to dedicate it to everybody we've dedicated it to, and we need to dedicate it to Pat Dye.
There you go.
Hold on 1 second. I can actually do that on the fly as we speak. People that are reading this book later on, John, people that are reading this book can say, "I was listening to the show." I'm typing right now. The authors would also like to dedicate this book to Coach Pat Dye. And then years. There we go.
We should probably just skip the rest of the show notes and edit the book during the podcast. People would probably love to listen to us do that.
Oh, my goodness. John, wait, what did you say here? I'm not clear on, did you say it was awesome beating Georgia Tech that time? Or it was almost as awesome as beating Georgia. I'm not clear on exactly what you said there. So, yeah, that would be great. I just hear this in the background. It's like tick, tick, the whole time. Yeah, that'd be great. I'm sure people would love it. Yeah, so we'll get a little book update in a little while because, you know, that book, there's another thing that between now and then. Again, we've got the barbecue show coming. We'll have fall camp we can look at. We'll be planning our road trip. And the book comes out in August. If I have to chain myself to this desk and work 24 hours a day through the month of July, and it may come to that. then if I could just stop finding cool new stuff, that would help. Because, see, I'm supposed to be copy editing, but I keep finding cool new stuff to add, which means more copy editing. So, But anyway, it's one of those things where at some point you have to abandon it. You know, works of art are never completed.
Okay.
They're a...
Yeah. Okay, George R. R. Martin, let's rein it in.
That's exactly. It's Auburn football, the winds of winter. the breezes of fall.
That's volume two at this point.
So. Yeah. No kidding. We're in the fumes of fall right now, man. Well, we've got a few things to talk about tonight. We have a first. I think first up, a kind of a fun thing. We know what our Power Five one out of conference opponent a year opponent's going to be now for like the next decade.
Yes.
And I got to say, before we get into that, I got to say, it keeps cracking me up. Every time somebody's like, 2029, I'll be dead by then. That's a million years. And I'm like, we're playing Penn State this year. I easily remember when we scheduled that and thinking, and you know, people weren't saying, oh, 2021, that'll never. In fact, I think we've even pushed it back, didn't we, to put the Clemson game in
Seems
or something?
Seems like it.
Yeah. So this is like if we were playing playing Penn State this year is like if we were playing our new opponent in 2033 or something. So it's not really that long from now. It'll get here before people realize it. But who is our new opponent?
University of Miami. Florida, not Ohio.
Not the cradle of coaches, the cradle of title stealers. I'll never forgive them. I'll never forgive and I'll never forget, John. Never, never, never.
1983.
Nope. Never forget. Howard Snellenberger. We got a whole section in the book on that, too. Basically, anything involving Pat Dye or Terry Bowden, we've got a whole thing in the book on it. I'll just go ahead and say that now. I don't want to keep saying it. So what do you, think?
How excited are you about playing Miami?
Well, see, here's the thing. If it was now, I'd be like, oh, yeah, man, Miami, let's do it. But you know that in 2030, they're going to be back to like 1987 or something, 1988, 89. It's just how it works. It's the law. They're going to be like, oh, we're playing Auburn? Well, start rolling in the five stars. Start rolling in the five stars. That's what they do. That's what everybody we play does.
I was hoping that only applied to series scheduled by our former athletic director.
Well, that's... How has Allen not gotten us Notre Dame? I thought he had inside connections with the big Golden Dome.
It still needs to happen. I mean, we still need to play them. So,
you know, if the day comes, and I got to say, if the day ever comes that they schedule like Mississippi State, I'm on draw.
You're saying Notre Dame.
Yeah, if Notre Dame schedules like Mississippi State, I will get in my car and drive to South Bend, Indiana with a can of spray paint, and I will deface the Golden Dome and touch down Jesus, and we're number one Mary, and fifth down Colorado Joe, and all the various things on their camp. I will, you know, I'm sure they have a statue of Lou Holtz, right? They got something like that. I will not tolerate. I can barely stand it that they've played other teams but in the SEC but not us. But if they go below us and just skip us, have they played LSU?
Yeah, in a bowl game, I know they played LSU. I'm not positive they played in the regular season.
I don't have any memory of them playing LSU. I remember them playing Georgia. I remember them playing Tennessee, which was stupid. I remember them playing Alabama. I remember them playing Florida in a bowl game when Jerome Bettis was on the team. About the only ones I can remember.
They played LSU in a bowl. I think they may have played LSU in a bowl game twice, but they have a home-and-home schedule with Georgia and Alabama in the future.
They've already played them a bunch. Oh, well. Oh, well. So Miami home-and-home. What do you think about it?
I'm happy. I mean, again, I think it's good to play. That, you know, I don't think they're ever getting back to where they were. I think they're going to be good but not dominant, you know. And I'm not going to woo when I say that. And I think we're still trying to recruit in Florida, so it's a good game to play on the road for Auburn. There's a lot of Auburn fans in Florida, so I think, you know, we'll have a great crowd there. And I think Miami's a fun team to play. I mean, it's not somebody who play often. It's exciting to have big non-conference teams like that come into Jordan Hare, so I'm excited about it. The real question is for me is this when I think about the Miami game. Some SEC schools and some non-SEC schools have – looked at the playoff expansion and knew, kind of seen it coming, and already changed their scheduling habits after 2025. And some of them, including Georgia and Alabama, have scheduled two big non-conference opponents per year after that. I mean, there's a year in there, I think, where like Georgia plays like Oklahoma and Clemson in the same year.
Wow.
So, yeah. And Alabama's not that bad. They generally play one good team and then, like, you know, Georgia Tech or Louisville or somebody with a set. But it's still, it's big non-conference games. And it's about ticket prices and season ticket, you know, cost. But I think it's also about they know that the playoff committee is going to look at team schedules and reward teams who are playing tough schedules. So I think it's something to think about.
It starts being more like basketball scheduling, where you need those quality wins, you know.
On the other hand, Auburn's schedule pretty darn tough already.
Yeah.
Don't need a whole bunch else. So.
No. I am all in favor of Alabama and Georgia bringing their schedules up closer to our normal level. It's like they have to take vitamins to get up to our just walking around strength. So that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, we got, I mean, I still, you know, 2004, I still can't believe that the complaint about Auburn not, you know, that we didn't get in the national championship game in 2004 was that our schedule wasn't as good as Oklahoma's or USC. That, I mean, that's just laughable. That's just flat laughable. And yet that's what they said, you know, because we played Citadel and we didn't want to play Citadel. We had to. They were the only team available when Oklahoma swiped Bowling Green off our schedule. But anyway, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I was still mad enough about Miami in this conversation. I don't need to go down another things Auburn fans are still pissed about 30 years later. As you know, we've been there and done that. So, let's see. We've got, and by the way, I always like to point out, because it's college football, the players that are going to play in that game are like eight right now, eight or nine, ten. So,
yes.
We don't even know who the coach will be, you know. So, yeah. Well, anyway.
But you can make your hotel reservation now, though.
Yeah. let's see. We've got a receiver that has left us. And I mean, Hal Presley, I remember the name. I remember he came in from Texas, but he just didn't want to stick around, or he came for the no passing tree and left because it actually required work.
Maybe he was from a spread, similar spread offense. I mean, the other thing is, I just think we need to remember that, like, all the true freshmen, none of them got to visit, that, especially the ones that signed, you know, recently, none of them got to visit campus ahead of time. You know, none of them got to visit the school or that kind of stuff. They, because things were so weird last year. So I think it's a little bit of that. And, you know, he wants to transfer closer to home or whatever. Maybe he's homesick. He would be the first freshman at Auburn to be there. So I'm not, you know, and I don't think he was, you know, in the top six or seven at wide receiver, but I think he was a talented recruit. We want to keep those kind of guys. And it does put the spotlight again on the receiver group and say, we got to get some production out of those people now and in the future.
Did you hear, speaking of receivers and passes and all, one of the Auburn beat writers has a podcast where he interviewed one of the stat guys, statistics guys.
Yes. Nathan King interviewed SEC Stat Cat on their podcast.
And the numbers he started reeling out about Bo Nix were catastrophically horrific. I didn't realize. He said he was like at the bottom of the SEC in several important categories.
In accuracy and in...
that's not important.
When under pressure, making plays and that kind of thing. So, yeah. And, I mean, the thing that he said I thought was interesting was that for some of the things that Harsin and them like to do, one of the best players in SEC was TJ Finley.
Yep. Yep. Now, I also heard later, and I didn't listen to the entire show, but I did hear later, there was something to do with Finley that was actually at the bottom, too. So there.
Yeah. Finley had problems with things, too. They talked about that.
Yeah. But they were saying how basically Gus had two passes, the deep ball and the bubble screen or whatever. And I feel like it was the deep ball maybe that Finley wasn't good at. He's much more of like a 49ers West Coast offense kind of thing.
Yeah, middle short. He's better at that. Nix is better, has a better arm. He's better at the long passes, but you know, he had the one of the lowest completion percentages in the SEC of the long pass. So
I don't know how much of that was Bo, though, and how much was, I don't know. But then again, I mean, he couldn't throw a ball that Schwartz could get under, and Schwartz could get under a lightning bolt.
Yep. So it's, you know, I think that's one thing we're all looking forward to seeing is different passing routes, different receiver route trees and combinations, and how the offense uses that. So there's definitely going to be some plays where somebody gets confused or runs the wrong route early in the season. I think that's going
to
happen.
But, well, the first thing they're going to have to do is say, wait, route?
Well, no. It's also like it's not going to be one picture on the sideline tells you the play either.
Yeah. And that's – I've never fully understood. I've never fully grasped the whole – I like the play card thing that we got from Oregon, but I never fully understood exactly what we were doing with it.
I mean, it was the whole intent of the play cards is to go faster. You don't have to communicate. You don't have to send in. You don't have to huddle. You don't have to send in the play with the player. You can tell the offense, and then if the defense adjusts, you could even change it again, right? But yeah.
Remember, in 10, we were still using the numbers, the letters and numbers on the flip chart. Yeah. And then after the Oregon game, we went to the pictures, to the cartoons and photos and wacky stuff, but I never understood exactly what it was supposed to represent. But it was supposed to be something.
It's a mnemonic thing, like if this play means this, right? Yeah. You know, so a picture of Schwarzenegger means like run on the strong side of the formation or something. So
yeah. But the other team was supposedly not able to figure that out, theoretically anyway. So, yeah, well. Let's see. So what do you think then about the receiver situation? Are we going to go to war with what we got? Are we going to be able to bring anybody in, JUCOs or transfers or any news about that or anything lurking out there?
There's nothing lurking, but I do think there's a chance they'd sign a wide receiver before fall.
Yeah.
I mean, if they could find somebody they like. Again, the transfer portal was open until the July 1st, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I think, you know, there may be a few, you know, hopefully we can find an offensive line tackle in there, but there hasn't really been anybody good at that position. But, you know, I think there's some other wide receivers out there. Maybe they could find one. So
that would be nice. That would be nice. Well, and then I also saw this morning that the U.S. Supreme Court, or SCOTUS, issued a ruling that it's like it was a 9-0 ruling or basically an 8-0 with one concurring opinion, which counts as a yes vote. So it was effectively a 9-0. And I'm going to actually kind of lean more on the concurring side of it, because the main opinion was a fairly moderate rebuke of the NCAA's practices with regard to student athletes and all that. But Justice Kavanaugh, in his concurrence, and if you're not a political science person like me or John, concurring means you vote with the majority but for different reasons, and so you get to write out in a separate opinion, which is not the main opinion, but it goes in the records as well. Here's why I agreed, you know. It's kind of like if we had a vote in the car to stop at the gas station on the way to Florida, and the dad says, you know, everybody else wants to use the bathroom and get snacks, but the dad wants to get gas for the car. So he writes a concurring opinion saying, I agree with him that we need to stop, but I have different reasons for wanting to stop. But we're all on the same page. Okay, in Kavanaugh's concurring opinion, he came down, he lowered the boom. He was like, no other business in America could do business with this business model and be credible, you know, that you're basically, you've got a $1 billion business and the main people that are raising your money are the only ones getting nothing. And he basically opened the door for challenge everything. We'll take all comers, you know. So what did you take from all that? And did you see it kind of the way I do, that it was fairly, and also there was the question of what will this do to the sport, which is probably the main question we should be, that along with the players, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think this decision specifically was about education-related benefits for athletes. So can the school give them a laptop? Can the school, you know, help them find a paid internship, or could a student athlete go study abroad and the school pay for it, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to this point from the NCAA has been no. And so the Supreme Court basically said, you know, that's a bunch of crud.
Yeah.
It's an antitrust violation. You're treating them differently. You're not allowed to do that. You're limiting what they can do and can't do in this area. And so in this area specifically about educational aid benefits, schools are now allowed to, you know, provide laptops or these other kinds of assistance to players. But as you point out, the larger context of the ruling was it kind of opened the NCAA up to these future challenges about which will ultimately result in probably players getting paid by the schools from the money they make related to the sports that they work in. So like that's where it's going. You know, and another part of it is his opinion. I think Kavanaugh said that, you know, let me quote it directly so I don't mess it up here.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly quoting him directly, but I felt like it was close enough.
No, you were very close. He said, price fixing labor is price fixing labor. And that's what the NCAA is doing. So
this would seem like a slam dunk to me, though. I mean, why couldn't the same – to me, it's not like saying you can't – it's not like they said, I'm a football player, give me a Dodge Charger, just as a random example I made up out of nothing. It's saying I want the same educational materials and opportunities that every other student has. That, how would they not – who would have thought they wouldn't have ruled this way? I don't get it.
It's crazy. But, yeah, so – and again, the NCAA is not brilliant in the legal department and they took a big loss today, and it's setting them up for future cases where they're going to lose again and again in this area. Yeah. The amateurism stuff is, you know, they basically set themselves up on a path to, you know, absolute failure.
So we're going to see what takes place over the ensuing years, because these things always I saw that the original case that this was based on was filed in 2014. So that student is long gone from college. It's one of those things that never directly benefits the person involved. It's like people later in their shoes.
Yeah. The player involved played on the West Virginia team that beat Clemson in that Orange Bowl like 70-20 or whatever.
All right. See, that lets me connect him a little more concretely to the to history. I can remember that. Wow. I wonder who the defensive coordinator was on that on that Clemson team. If only I could remember.
Certainly wouldn't employ that person.
No, we would never have hired that person for a several-year span or even threatened to make him our head coach there for a little while. That would never. Imagine if you went back in time to that day and people are watching that game, and then you look at him and say in a totally straight face, with a totally straight face, say, the defensive coordinator that's currently giving up 70 right now, there's going to come a day where Auburn very nearly hires him as our defensive coordinator? No, as the head coach. He'll already be the defensive coordinator. And then the people would just be like, I don't have
it's
it handy.
It's the big one.
Oh, here it is.
Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. You hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
And I have Kevin Steele's throat in my hands. Speaking of that Supreme Court ruling, I thought we needed to get a little more in-depth information on it. And so I asked if we could get a special guest to join us tonight. And I see he's coming into the studio now. So let's go ahead and welcome. Hello, Van and John. It's your old buddy. The now retired Coach Snyder. They called me up today on the talking machine. They wanted to tell me that they're going to start paying the players. And I said, oh, did Bear Bryant finally get in charge of the NCAA? Is that what they did? They got the bear put in charge of the committee? How great. Going to the Alabama model for the whole country. That's warms my heart. So excited.
And Eddie Sutton's in charge of the basketball side.
Oh, Eddie. I remember I once babysat for Eddie. He sat on my lap and he reached up at me and he handed me a FedEx envelope full of cash. He pulled out his binky and said, Coach Snyder, this is just keep it fair. Keep it fair, Coach. Here's your FedEx envelope. It warmed my heart, John. It warmed my heart. Oh, let me see. Oh, I'm not done. Oh, just cause my music ran out. Don't get me out of the studio this fast. I got a little more to say. John? Johnny, I heard... Uh-oh. Where'd my music go? Boy, get that music back going. There we go. Get it right. Plexico, you nincompoop. Johnny, I heard that they're going to the playoffs. I've been waiting so many years to finally go to have playoffs. I'm excited.
I think your Kansas State team would have made it a couple of times.
I know it. Don't you know? So they're going to play in the Ice Bowl in Green Bay. I'm looking forward to the Wildcats going up to Green Bay. Wait, these are college playoffs. You can't have college playoffs. This is amateurism. Wait, no, we're going to the Bear Bryant model. Never mind. All right, that's enough. Get me out of here, Percy. All right, Coach just left the building, so thank you, Coach, for coming in. It's been a long time. It's been a long time
since,
since we've gotten to hang out with him. That was nice, I thought. It's good. All right. Well, yeah, it has been a while. We had to get the most interesting coach in the world to join us again sometime. He hadn't been on in a while either. You have a very interesting question about the preseason magazines. Now, I have a choice up here in Illinois/Missouri land. I can either get just the standard national magazine, which y'all might not even know about down in the South, folks, or I can get the Big Ten magazine plus Notre Dame on the cover, or I can get the SEC magazine, which always has Missouri on the cover. And interestingly, there's always plenty of those available. They're never sold out.
I was going to say, those Missouri on the cover ones, there's a lot of a lot of recycling landfill space filled with those. So.
No lines out the door of the Barnes & Noble or the grocery store for those. Yeah, so I actually picked up there's Lindy's, there's Athlon, there's Sporting News, there's a couple of others, and then, of course, there's
Phil Steele.
So what do you get?
Traditionally, there's two that I buy every year. One is Athlon.
Okay.
I'm showing you that I have the Athlon.
I think that's the one I have. I think that's the one I have. Yeah, the one you just held up.
I like Athlon. It's got advanced stats in it, and it's got little coaching things that Stephen Godfrey interviews the coaches and does little opposition quote things, which about all the teams that I like, and some good stuff in there. It gets well laid out. And then a lot of times I buy the Phil Steele because I'm a data person, and there's a lot of data in the Phil Steele. But I know you have thoughts.
There's one thing you can never say when you have the Phil Steele magazine.
I don't have facts to back this up.
No, you can't say that. In fact, you have, I would argue, more facts than you need and a lot of facts you literally don't need.
That's very fair.
We'll get to that in a second. But, yeah, I believe I picked up the one that you just showed. And I didn't bring it down to the studio just because, I mean, off the top of my head, Auburn is ranked somewhere in the top 25, not really in the top 10 or anything, but like 12, 15, usually 18, somewhere in there, kind of our sweet spot in years. It's kind of like in years where the voters out there, the polls and all, really don't know what to make of us. Because, like, there's three places Auburn shows up in the polls, okay? There's three places. In years where we've just had a good year, they rank us in, like, the top 5, 6, 7, and then we collapse, and we end up, like, not ranked at all or ranked low. Then there's the years where we did that the previous year, and so the next year they don't rank us at all. We usually do pretty good in those years, right? We fight our way up and end up in the top 10. And then there's those other years, those third type of years are the years where they don't know what we didn't have a horrible year the year before, and we didn't have a great year the year before. And they're like, screw it, it's Auburn, make them 16. Does that seem about right to you?
It seems about right. I think based on the coaching change and how Auburn was last year, in most rankings I've seen, Auburn's ranked, you know, between 20 and 30. So.
Okay.
A lot of it has to do, as always, with the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the things that's always useful to me, the preseason magazines. Like I said, I flip through all the SEC team schedules very quickly and see who's playing who think it really is a tough schedule, and then who has different. And the other thing I think is interesting, just is you get the perceptions about other people and their perception of Auburn's talent at different positions. Because I think we have a perception about Auburn's talent at different positions on the team. But then you look at some of these, it gets useful to go read some of these magazines where, they don't always see things the same way, I think Auburn's linebackers are among the best in the conference. I think we're really strong there. And some magazines go on with that, but some don't have us in the top half of the SEC. And I think defensive backs and running backs are the same, and some places we're ranked high in those and some places we're not. And I think running back may be a depth
right.
and overall talent thing.
Yeah, I think that's
it. It's not a knock on Tank himself, but.
Yeah, I think if a college has like 4 8 out of 10 backs, they're going to get higher ranked than one that has a 10 and a 6 and a question mark,
Yeah.
My favorite part is the ones that have what an opposing coach in the same league says. Because, A, it's fun to try to figure out who said it. If we could see their body while they're talking and their faces digitized out, but you could see their hands, you'd know it was Saban if he's like, well, I think that his hands are just flying all over the place because Saban drives me nuts with that. But I like how they said this time. I'm trying to think how they put it. It was something like, it may be the one you have there, but they said something like, for Auburn, they said something like, they're having a culture change. Everything is different. Everything is night and day. It's going to remain to see how that catches on, how effective it is, how much of the buy-in there is. There's stuff like that. And talking about how like the defensive approach is changing, the offense with the passing game is changing. So I thought it was pretty spot on, but they kind of left the question hanging. And I think that's where we are, is like the question is just hanging. Yeah, we needed to do this, but how quickly will it reap benefits? So what else from them do you want to is worth looking at?
I think it's interesting to see what Auburn players, magazines think are really good and they're worth of all SEC contention, that kind of thing. And it's the players for the most part you would suspect. I think Dracia Miller, the transfer cornerback from West Virginia, gets a lot of love in some places, and that's interesting to see. Mm. So I think the other thing is, look at the statistics from last year's team and you just forget stuff, right? Like I think I've forgotten how bad Auburn was on third down on defense last year. And they talked about that on that podcast we referenced earlier, too.
Oh, yeah.
It was a real problem. We were really, really bad at getting off the field on third down last year.
Mm.
And we got to get better at that. It's not just a pass rush thing. It was a coverage thing and a tackling thing and everything else. But that we went from kind of the best in the country in 2019, one of the top five teams of the country to one of the bottom 10 teams of the country a year ago.
Man.
So
that's usually when you look at where the rot is setting into a team, or like if it's long term, but even if it's short term, where the problem is, it's like, it's kind of like if you're driving a car and the temperature gauge starts getting into the red or the engine starts knocking a little bit, you're like, okay, there's some big problems under the hood. This is the first sign I'm seeing of them. It seems like getting off the field on third down on defense is one of those first signs that you get to see about a team when there's bigger problems brewing.
That's fair.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got to correct that for sure. I feel good that see, that's what's so funny is coming out of last season, going to the off season, I was thinking that, well, one thing that Harsin and his staff are going to have on their side is at least the defense will be pretty good. But the more you hear, the more you realize they've had to do a lot of work. Apparently, when they came in and looked at it, I get the sense that Harsin and our new defensive coordinator,
Mason.
Mason, yeah. I get the feeling that they looked around and said, you know, we need to make some, we need to fix a few things. We need to improve a few things. I don't feel like they looked in, looked around and said this is a ready to play day tomorrow defense.
No, I think that's fair. Again, some of that is changing schemes. You need different players in different spots and that kind of thing. But I do think that they wanted to change some things, and I think they have, and I think you'll see it in the long term. But I mean, I think you were right about the coaching comments in the book that the defense is going to have to kind of carry the team early on while the offense kind of figures some of this stuff out that they're trying to implement.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm more confident now because, like I said, I thought up front that the defense could do that. But the very fact that we've had to make so many changes and bring in so many people makes me now realize what it would have been like if we hadn't been able to do that. And I think the defense would have been weaker than we expected. And that would have been unfortunate because, you know, Watson might have gotten some of the blame, and it might have just been what he inherited. You know, I mean Mason. I'm sorry, what he inherited. So yeah, Derek Mason. I don't know. Anyway, so I was trying to think some of the players. I think Anders Carlson, at least in one of the magazines he looked at, got some love, and is really. We talked about that when we talked about the kickers, that he was in line. If he were the kicker for 4 years, I think he could catch his brother, or it'd be close, depending on how the offense does and everything. It's one of those things where if you've got an offense that never crosses the 50-yard line, your kicker's not going to do anything. If you've got an offense that puts it in the end zone every time, your kicker is going to have a lot of extra points. Kicker's like an offense that gets to the red zone and stalls out, and that was Gus's specialty for years. So we had so many kickers setting records under Gus, you know. We'd get to the 20 and be like, Eek! And then here come Carlson, or here'd come Byram or whoever. Well, no, not Byram, but after that, but yeah. All right, anything else from the magazines you wanted to mention? Oh, wait, we did talk about Phil Steele. What do you like about the Phil Steele magazine?
I like the unnecessary data.
He literally called it unnecessary. I love it.
Again, there's pages and pages of tables of data in there, and I like it. There's data about, you know, offensive line experience and strength of schedule and then power rankings, but also kind of returning experienced starters by position, by team, and that kind of thing. He looks back at different things over time and gives you different stats on them. So I appreciate that stuff in his magazine.
I think that some of it is useful.
Yeah.
And some of it is just interesting.
I mean, one of the things he does, I think it's real, it's actually useful and it's good, is like he looks at like, what were the things that were luck last year? Turnovers and that, and one or two other things where there's a luck basis to him. And so who was the really unlucky and who's the really lucky? And we should expect some reversal of fortune.
Yeah.
And so he identifies those teams that are due for a shift in luck. And I think that's relevant a lot of times.
That is. Yeah. I'm sure in 2014 he was saying Auburn caught all the breaks last year and they're going to crash and burn. I wouldn't doubt it. But so that's true. There's also, though, I think that there's good history in it, which is appealing to me to a certain degree. There's good, useful statistical player information. But I feel like there's also stuff in it that is really only of interest to hardcore gamblers. Now,
yes,
they buy his magazine. They put food on his table. So far be it from me to, you know, poo-poo on that. But, you know, he, in addition to the stuff you just mentioned, there'll be the section where it'll be like Auburn plays Ole Miss this year. Well, who's our out of conference? Penn State. Auburn plays Penn State. The last time Auburn played Penn State, it was a full moon on a Monday of a bowl game. When Auburn plays under a full moon, they are 17-3. And gamblers are like, bet the farm, it's a full moon, yeah! You know, and you're just like, that doesn't really help me a whole lot if I'm just interested in football, so.
That's fair.
Feels like the last time Auburn played Alabama State, a fly landed on the far side of my beer mug in the bar. So if a fly lands on the far side of your beer mug, bet the farm, baby! You know it's going to happen, so. I just... yeah, a lot of it has that prop bet kind of mentality to it that just kind of turns me off. But yeah, I appreciate it. I don't know why he goes. I don't know why else he would go back so far. You know what I mean? He keeps his information there for like 10 years running or something. And I'm just like, what Tommy Tuberville did against this team in the aughts doesn't really affect in any way, I don't think, what we're going to do on Saturday, you know?
No.
No. All right. Let's see. Our other topic tonight is quarterbacks. We're finally up to quarterbacks. And so I didn't open up my guide, but I can tell you this. I do know that we've had a few good quarterbacks over the years. And
not as many as good running backs, but a few.
Yeah, we're not quarterback you, but we've had serviceable quarterbacks that were able to get the there's the passing statistics. Yeah, okay. Oh, there's a face I didn't expect to see. Okay. So what do you want to talk about with regard to the quarterbacks? How shall we broach this subject?
I think we need to look at, okay, there's two giants in this position, and then there's some other really good players, and then there's kind of a group of very good or good players, right?
Okay.
So to me, at the top of the food chain for Auburn is Cameron Newton and Pat Sullivan.
Which is interesting in that neither one of them is in the top three career passing leaders, but for different reasons.
Right. A different era for Sullivan, and Cam was there for 1 year. So I'm not losing sleep about that in this case. I think they're the two best quarterbacks, and it's not close. And then I think we get to the guys who were very good and were there a while, right? So Jason Campbell, Stan White, Brandon Cox
is interesting to me in that he basically was the starter for 3 years, didn't play a lot in 04, but played 05, 06, and 07. And he benefited from having some of the best receivers we've ever had on the, especially the 2005, but a little bit left over on 06. By 07, he didn't have nearly as many receivers to throw to, but 05 and to a certain degree 06, Cox had a really good, he had a good offensive line. He was very accurate, short range, fairly. He was a good West Coast type quarterback, I always thought. And he could take advantage of those receivers. They're all three different quarterbacks. And what's interesting in career passing, I mean, Damian Craig isn't really, he's fifth. You got Stan White, Jason Campbell, Brandon Cox, Pat Sullivan, and then Damian Craig. Number six is Jarrett Stidham in just 2 years, which is pretty good. Let me just go ahead and finish this out. Number seven, Patrick Nix. Number eight, Reggie Slack. Number nine, Nick Marshall. Number 10, Ben Leard. Now, a lot of it, like we're saying, a lot of it has to do with how many years they got to play. And Damian Craig really only played as our main quarterback 2 years, 96, 97. Brandon Cox, 3 years. Pat Sullivan, 3 years, because they didn't let freshmen play back then. Jason Campbell, I would say 3.5 years, because Campbell got to play a good bit in 2001, but he wasn't the starter most of the year. And then Stan was the man for 4 straight years. So I just think it's important to understand that there's a lot of apples and oranges in this, because they played different numbers of years. The running backs, they were all 3 or 4 years pretty much to some degree. So how do you evaluate like those top five?
I mean, I think I look at a couple of things. One is, how successful were the teams, but also as the quarterback, it's not just about yards. It's about accuracy, touchdowns and interceptions, right? Mm. Surprising thing to me, looking at this again, going back and looking at this is, Jason Campbell had the fewest interceptions of anybody that played 3 years or more and out of this group. He had 24 interceptions out of a 4-year career. Stan White had the most yards. He had 52 interceptions.
52, yeah. Oh, man.
So more than twice as many as Jason Campbell.
Look at Stan White in Pat Dye's last year of 1992. 5 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, and he was still the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
He was still the starting quarterback. Now, Damian Craig had the same number of interceptions as Jason Campbell, 24. I would just say I think that Jason played more.
Yeah. I mean, Damian really only played 2 seasons, I think. And the other ones, he was a an occasional backup.
Yeah, he came in off the bench a few times, but he was the man in 96 and 97. So that's a good point. Yeah, 52, Jason Campbell, 24, Brandon Cox, 32, Pat Sullivan, 30. Stidham had 11. He was actually pretty good. I mean, he was on pace to have, over a four-year period, he was on pace to have like 22, which is better than Jason Campbell.
And here's the other one that we were griping about, Bo Nix's accuracy earlier. Brandon Cox, 59% basically completion percentage. Jason Campbell, 64.6%.
Wow. That's yeah, that's really good. That's better than anybody else.
We kill for 60%. And Jared Stidham's second on this list in completion percentage, but we kill for something like that right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Hey, Nick Marshall got up to 602 before he was done. I remember he was just below 60% his first year, and they said they were going to get him up closer to 70, and it was really more, it was a little bit higher than 60, so he kind of evened out to 602. I wanted to just check Ben Leard's interceptions because, my gosh, you know, he only had 18.
Yeah.
But I feel like every one of the 18 was a pick six at a key moment. But he had a good year in 99 and 2000. But
he did. I think we got to talk on a per. Now let's talk about per one season basis, right? Who was the best? Now outside of Cam.
Yeah.
We're gonna put him in his own category over here. But of the rest of them, I immediately think about Damian Craig in 97.
Oh yeah.
Right. I mean that number the most yards any Auburn quarterback's ever passed for in a season. Passing yards per game, the most attempts per game. I think it was a very productive season for him. And he ran for a lot of yards, too, in that year.
Yeah, the thing, I mean, Jason Campbell in 04 threw the ball great. 20 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Jason's completion percentage his senior year, 04, was right at 70%. 696. We can round that up to 70%. That's phenomenal. 2,700 yards. But 2,700 is not close to the best because, remember, he had Cadillac and Ronnie Brown to do a lot of stuff. He wasn't having to throw the ball all the time. Damian Craig in 97, he was the offense. He was Michael Jordan on the, 86 Bulls, you know what I mean? Not the 91, 92, 93 Bulls. He was the team. Rusty Williams was his top running back, okay? So, yeah, that 97 Damian Craig with Terry Bowden's offense and, Carsten Bailey, Eric Lowe, Robert Baker, those were just some good receivers. Tyrone Goodson.
And the other one we got to put in that pile, I think, is the Nick Marshall 2014 season was a great season.
Oh, yeah.
He was really good that year.
608 percentage, 2532 yards, 20 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, 195 yards a game. Yeah, he was amazing. And that was with also being able to run.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we look at total offense, he's like number 6 in all-time total offense playing 2 years.
That's right.
Everybody above him played 3 or 4 years, and he's at 4,508. No, that's passing yards.
He had 800 yards rushing in 2014.
And 2,532 yards passing. That's total 3,330. That's, yeah. Stidham had 3,311 in 2017.
No, he had a great year that year. We got to give him some credit. It wasn't just carry on.
Right. Yeah, that 2017 team, it deserved better, but we all know that story. And the one we haven't mentioned yet that I think we have to mention, because we talked about Stan White, just a solid, dependable, and the only four-year unchallenged starter.
Mm-hmm.
Stan is the only one that started all 4 years and never was challenged. I mean, there was never a case of, it might be somebody else for a couple of games, and then we're going to go back to Stan. No, Stan was the man for 4 years, as best I remember. But the one we haven't mentioned is Reggie Slack. Slack was kind of like Damian Craig before Damian Craig in a way, in that he could run. He wasn't nearly as quick and elusive as Damian, but he could prolong the play and scramble and buy time for his receivers to get open to a certain degree. And he could run for a first down if he had to, although too many of our big losses ended with him getting sacked or getting caught short of the first down when he did have to scramble. But, you know, 88 and 89 were his teams, and he was just solid.
He was, and I think, again, those were defensive-oriented teams with good running games, and he just had to – we were more of a passing game, passing team than we had been earlier in the 80s, but a lot of his job was to just, you know, make some plays off play action and keep things moving, and he was very good at it. He was very efficient, and I think he made, you know, made key plays for Auburn to deliver some wins.
Yeah, in his career, he had 23 touchdown passes – and 23 interceptions. So just dead even. He was not great, but he got the job done. I wanted to see Cam in 1 year passed for 2854. So, yeah, that's more than... Okay. Slack had 2230 in 88 and 1996 in 1989. So, all right. So... what other thoughts do you have about these quarterbacks you want to get out there?
Well, the other thing I want to throw out is I want to throw three, you know, kind of earlier, before we were a passing team, quarterbacks just into the pile. They don't compete. They don't compare statistically to these, but Jeff Berger, Pat Washington, Randy Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Get your thoughts about them, especially since you've been so immersed in Pat Dye world.
No kidding. Oh, yeah. So we'll start with Randy Campbell. He was like sixth on the depth chart in 81. We were playing Clayton Buford and Joe Sullivan and quarterbacks I've never heard of. And Randy Campbell was nowhere to be seen. He was the water boy, basically. And in the offseason before 82, he came in and he said it. He said, I won the job based on my decision making because we were running the triple option, the wishbone. And that requires the quarterback to either give it to the fullback, keep it and look for a hole, or pitch it to the halfback. And he was very good at reading the defense in motion as the play was developing and make the right decision. He was never the greatest athlete. In fact, he probably was one of the worst athletes on the field in any game he ever played in. But he was cerebral. He could run the option. And he could run. I mean, there were games... I believe I discovered in the 83 Texas game, our infamous loss to Texas that cost us a shot at the national championship. In the Texas game, he carried the ball more than Bo Jackson or Lionel James. Now, part of that was a result of the way that Texas was defending us. They were taking away the pitch.
Sure.
And Dye later said Texas psyched us out into not giving the ball to our best players. We should have just done it. But yeah, that was Campbell. I mean, the flip side of Campbell, though, when he would throw a long pass, quote-unquote long pass, it looked like he was doing a shot put. He'd have to set up and heave that ball, man, everything he had. So he couldn't just, like, sling it on the run. No. He was the anti-Damian Craig, you know what I mean?
Yep.
That was Campbell. Berger and Washington, you know, they were both on the same team about the same time. Dye kept vacillating between Washington, Berger, Bobby Walden, a couple other guys, Mike Mann from Sylacauga. Ultimately went with Washington in 84-85. Washington, again, not the greatest passer, and we didn't have a very sophisticated passing offense, but Washington was able to do better than most of those other guys at running the option, which we were still doing in those years. So Washington was able to extend plays, make pretty good decisions, and good on the keeper and all that. A more athletic guy than Randy Campbell. Jeff Berger is funny because when he was recruited, he said that coaches would ask him, are you an option quarterback or are you a passing quarterback? And he said he would try to figure out what they wanted to do and answer what they wanted to hear. So when Pat Dye came to him, he said, oh, I'm an option quarterback. Well, then in 86, when it's Berger's turn, he's in more of a passing offense, and he was okay with that. So it actually kind of worked out that he could do both because he was recruited as an option quarterback, but when we went to a passing offense, he was the best passer on the team by 86. And so he had a really good 86 and 87 as the quarterback. Berger won us some big games those 2 years.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on those guys?
It was, again, I put them on here because you cannot compare the statistics. It was a different era. But that they were important players in Auburn's history at that position. And that they, you know, like you said, I think they all won some key games for us during that time period as Dye was developing the programs.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you said, though, it's not just about passing yards or whatever, because there are other things in different times that have been more important. What's a quarterback that wasn't included in any of this that you have fond memories of? I'm trying to think back.
I'll throw one at you.
Yeah.
Chris Todd.
Oh, that Todd guy. Yeah, Chris Todd from 09. Absolutely. He had a really good year in 09, for sure.
And that offense was fun that year.
So. Yeah. And 11 and 12, our quarterback situation was just kind of a nightmare because we were supposed to have the guy from Wisconsin that went to the Seahawks.
Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that didn't work out. So, no Sean White. No, he's not on there anywhere. And no Bo Nix yet.
You thinking about Jeremy Johnson time? Or?
No Jeremy Johnson. I was trying to think who I think we've accounted for everybody.
Oh, they had Cody in there for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Cody Burns, that's right, yeah. Much better receiver than he was a quarterback, though. Got him a national championship ring as a receiver and caught a touchdown in the national championship game. Can't beat that. Okay, anything else about the quarterbacks? Oh, you want to play the game real quick of if you got to pick one and it can't be Cam?
It can't be Cam or Pat Sullivan. You have to pick one.
Okay.
To win a game for Auburn,
who's your backup? Who's your backup?
So you pick two.
Yeah, pick your starter and your backup.
All right, you go first.
I for me, my starter is Jason Campbell, and my backup is Damian Craig. And I honestly am happy flipping them around. I might do a Steve Spurrier and switch them every play because mm-hmm. they both are so dynamic. And they both could do something that no other Auburn quarterback could do until Cam, which was connect on the long bomb. That was what Jason Campbell brought to the offense in 04 that he hadn't even really been asked to do before that. When Borges came in 04, we were pounding him with Cadillac and Ronnie Brown. And then every now and then, Jason would just uncork it down the field for Aroma Shadu, Obamanu, Mix, Courtney Taylor. Man, we had receivers on that team. So I'm going to take those two.
I think that's probably the right call. I really like Nick Marshall, Brandon
yeah.
Cox.
Can't go wrong with Nick Marshall now. That's it feels weird pick him.
Yeah. So, I might go Jason Campbell, Nick Marshall, but yeah. That's probably some recency bias on the Damian Craig side. So yeah. Damian Craig was the whole freaking team.
He was.
That's the. This is the other part. Jason Campbell had all of those great players with him, and Damian Craig was the whole team. He was running out there, you know, making the cake and decorating it and putting it in the oven and serving it to the customers too. So,
what could Damian Craig have done with Cadillac and Ronnie Brown behind him?
He'd have torn people up.
I mean, I think his receivers were comparable to Jason. I feel like Bailey and Lowe and Willie Gauthier and Tyrone Goodson and all those guys, I feel like they were pretty comparable to the 04 receivers. But and I've always said we've had like three great groups of wide receivers in our adult lifetime, and that was the 02 to 06 crowd and the 95, 96, 97 crowd. And maybe the ones a couple of years ago Stidham got to throw to some of them. What about Stidham? I mean, his numbers are really good. We don't poo-poo him.
They are. No, and I think 17, he was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, he was again, we forget in those Georgia and Alabama games, he was really good in those games, you know?
Yeah, he was.
But I also think it was different, and there was a lot of screen passes. And carry on was the piece of the offense the other team was trying to take away all the time and stuff. So I can't put him in the same categories as other guys.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, I'm good with that if you are. I think we've covered the quarterbacks pretty well. And as always, we welcome your thoughts and input too. So email auwishbone@gmail.com, or grab us on Twitter and tweet at us at auwishbone. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because there's no wrong answers really on a lot of this. These were all really great players, and we were lucky to have them all. And again, it's one of those things, like I said, about recency bias, that we saw most of these guys play. So, I mean, Sullivan is the only one I didn't see play, really. And it was in my lifetime and yours. We just were little. So all these guys played while we were alive, you know. It's not like there's somebody up here from the 1957 team or something, you know. Although, what was his name? Jimmy Seidel?
Mm-hmm.
He was like the Johnny Manziel of his day, I think, right?
He was a great running quarterback, yes.
Yeah, but got hurt or something. Yeah, okay. All right. I got a quick book update, and then we're going to thank our patrons. I just let you guys know we're doing the second draft now, and I'm just going through and adding more cool stuff to the stuff that John and I put together over the last year. I've been doing a lot of research into the newspapers and finding like quotes and original, I'm looking in the primary sources, as we say in graduate school, looking at like what they actually said in the papers after the game and all. So I've found some really cool stuff. Like, I'll give you a quick hitter of what I found today, John, that you will appreciate. I looked up the 87 Georgia Tech game, because when I came to what you and I had said and written about that game before, we just kind of said, you know, the basics. Well, you know, Auburn was losing most of the game, and we got the big touchdown, the Tillman, and then Andre Bruce. We talked about all that. But I said, I want to look and make sure there's not anything else I'm missing. And I found a really neat bit where Georgia Tech had an All-American defensive back named Lilly, and he was covering Tillman all day. And there was apparently a lot of talk between the Georgia Tech defense was giving our guys crap the whole game, just dogging them, and just saying stuff to them. And apparently that Lilly guy at one point knocked Freddie Weygand out, and he stood over Weygand and said, "You're done," and pointed at him, and then went over to the sideline, picked up the phone to the coaches and said, "I just put Weygand out of the game," bragging about it. And so at the end, when Berger threw the bullet by Berger, right, to Tillman, Tillman jumped over that Lilly guy to catch the touchdown. And they said Lilly, the newspaper I was reading said Lilly sat there in the end zone for 30 seconds, just couldn't believe it. And he later was quoted as saying, "I don't understand how Tillman caught that. I didn't think he caught it." And he was just sitting there staring at the ground. And then I got Lawyer Tillman walks over to him and hands him the football and says, "Here, you've been wanting this the whole game. Here you go." And I'm just like, see, that's why I go do the research, John, because I didn't know about that. It's in the book now. Tillman just went over and handed him the football while he's sitting on the ground depressed and says, "Here you go. You wanted it. You got it, baby." I love it.
Nice.
I love it. Yes. All right. There's your book update. The book is currently about 450 pages long, covers every game to some degree or other. Some games take 5 or 6 pages. Some take a couple of sentences. But every game pretty much from 1981 through 1998. But we got a few tidbits about Brooks and Cribbs and Andrews back in the late 70s. We start with the end of the Shug Jordan era and then go through Barfield and then Pat Dye and then... And it's been fun researching some of the Barfield games, too, because I don't know everything about Brooks and Cribbs and Andrews. And it was really kind of cool to find out, you know, I only really kind of dug into a couple of those. So you guys are going to love this book. We have to thank our patrons. We wouldn't be able to do these kind of things like the book, this podcast, and other things without you guys. And by the way, Andy Fix and I have started up a whole new podcast covering Babylon 5 from start to finish. It's really catching on. We're getting a lot of downloads now. People have been saying good things. People have been saying, "Oh, we really enjoy how you do it." So check that out. It's the White Rocket Babylon 5 Review Podcast. And it's also at babylon5.podbean.com. There's just the www.b5reviews.com goes to it. So if you like Babylon 5 or you want to check it out on it's on HBO Max, and listen to our show. We have to thank the folks that are currently doing that. And by the way, remember, if you are a patron on August 1st, your name goes in the book. Right up at the front, your name will be in our book. So be sure to be a patron by the end of July so you carry over into August and your name will be in the book. Here are the folks who are currently going to be in the book unless they bail on us between now and August 1st. I was thinking this was a this was an incentive, but it may actually cause some people to flee in terror. But make sure your name on the screen is what you want it to say. We have to thank Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, Logan Chilton, Michael Kirstner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kanjian, Are You Falling Up? Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B., Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE Richie, we got to get better at celebrating. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard. Oh, by the way, John, Andy, when I told Andy Fix, my co-host on the Babylon 5 show last week, about people putting their name, putting what they want, I said, I'm feeling like now people are just putting as their name something they want me to say on the air. And Andy's like, I would totally sign up for that just to get you to say things. He says, that should be your selling point. John is like, yep. Anyway, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Cato the Barner, Chris the Hilton, Colby Butler, Danny Flack, and on we go with Darius Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, Anytime Now, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger, staying alive, staying alive. Alex, this is what I'm talking about. Alex Wynn, Auburn Elvis. Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brendan Smith, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason, the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, Kenneth Britt Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, and finally, Mick Vijakana, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brent Rumble, Chris, plus, never to be forgotten, our one-time and our anonymous month-to-month donors. We thank you all. You're going to be in the book. I'm so excited about it. Thank you so much. Go to, if you want to join the crowd, I didn't tell you where to go. I'll tell you where to go. Go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and click on the big orange button to become a patron. We had a couple of new ones this month. We tend to lose a couple and gain a couple and kind of keep about the same number, but we appreciate it. Now, John, are you ready to guess the game?
I am ready.
It's everybody's favorite segment, Guess the Frickin' Game. And here comes Jared.
Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Ulrich, the yard sale artist, here with your Guess the Game, episode 17. Okay, Van, John, no send-ins this week, so this one's all me. I'm going to give you just a little bit of a play, and I truly believe you're going to get it off of this. But, hey, let's give it a listen.
In every game this season on their first offensive snap, has thrown a pass, and in every game this season, they have completed the pass. They're going for the 11th.
Yep, I can hear the gears turning. I will see you gentlemen in the hint file.
I know it. I'm sorry to be no fun tonight, guys. But I instantly know it because I remember that factoid. I remember that statistic. So let me recuse myself. John, what do you think? Yeah. You got anything?
I do not remember. I want to say it was a team that was playing Auburn and not Auburn. And so I think it was Alabama, like in, I don't know, 13 or 10 or 17 or something. What was it?
Let's look at our evidence. Who was that voice?
That was Vern.
Okay, so it was 2:30 CBS.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an Auburn game at 2:30 on CBS, and either Auburn or the other team had completed their first pass on the first play of the game every game and then up till this one, and then we were about to find out if it was this one or not. So what year would Auburn have been on TV, CBS 230, most likely?
Again, because this was the 11th game, right?
He said? Not necessarily. I don't think so. I don't think it was. I think this was earlier in the season than you might think.
Maybe
like 7th, somewhere around 6th, 7th.
I'm not sure now, so you keep going.
I'm going to give you one more clue. Let's say it is the other team, it's not Auburn, that had that statistic going, had that streak going, of completing a pass the first play of every game. A 230 CBS game against a team that threw the ball that much and loved the pass that much.
So was it A&M with Manziel? With Bird?
You're warm. You're a little later than it, I think. I may be leading you down a blind alley, because I may be wrong, but I feel
you think this was Arkansas with Bobby Petrino?
I think you got it.
You think this was 2010 Arkansas with Bobby Petrino?
I think it's 2010 Bobby Petrino Arkansas. I think it was Mallett. I think it was Mallett had completed his first pass of every game, and we knocked it down. And we won the game, so it's fair to Jared uses games we won. That's an important clue that he doesn't say every episode, but we know he said at the beginning he was only using games that we won. All right. You want to hear the clue?
I do.
I'm going on the record. I think it was 2010 Arkansas. But again, the only reason I know that or think that is because I recently, like a year ago, remember last summer during the lockdown, we were watching a lot of games and doing like replay stuff and all on this show?
Yeah, we watched that game.
We watched that game, exactly, and I feel like I remember them saying that. So here comes the hint.
All right, boys, welcome to the hint file, and let's give that a listen with no bleeps.
In every game this season on their first offensive snap, Alabama has thrown a pass, and in every game this season, they have completed the pass. They're going for the 11th.
I bet that if you didn't get it in the first round, that you've definitely got it now. So what's it going to be? I'll see you in the answer file.
Let me retract everything I just said.
See, again, I think it was Alabama, and it was an so I think it was 17 or 13.
Okay. That was my guess, and I was wrong. So we'll go with which one of those are you going to put a little more faith in?
Which one of those Alabama teams was more pass happy?
Was 17 when you're starting to get into like Tua and all that, or
17 was Hurts?
Yeah. 13 was McCarron. Yeah.
Let's say that one.
13. All right. Let's say 2013 Alabama. I feel embarrassed that I got that wrong. I could have sworn that was a statistic that we heard in that game. Here we go.
If you guessed that this was Auburn versus Alabama in the 2005 Iron Bowl, where it was just sack, 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 sack. You guessed right. And I do believe I'm all caught up on my listener send-ins. If I've made a mistake or overlooked someone's send-in, please let me know. You can do that through Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. So hit me up at Yard Sale Artist with any ideas you might have or if I've accidentally overlooked you. And until next time, Van, John, War Eagle. Who can it be
now? John, all I can do.
Blame yourself.
I do. He got us with that one.
And I say you. Holy cow.
I mean, there was no... No, it was not good. So,
and I was at that game.
Yeah, I was too.
The Hog of Zach Brody game.
Yeah, 05. Absolutely. That was the one where I thought we were going to win 50 to nothing. Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. All right. Well, occasionally, John, I am wrong about Auburn football.
It occurs.
It occurs.
Yeah, we can't win them all. So, again, if you have good ideas for guests of the game, please send them to Jared, because...
Will I ever get one right again?
Someone knows. God knows.
You know, when I go to Dragon Con this year and meet Jared, And I say, hey, Jared. He's going to say, you missed the honk if you sack Brody question. You and John missed that, so.
You sit at my table.
And then he's going to get up and say,
I cannot eat. I am finicky about company.
And that's going to be it. That's going to be it. Oh, man. I hate it. I hate missing it. I was so confident. Oh, well. I had to move on. Shake it off. It's just like a, it's like a defensive back that gets burned for a touchdown. You got to have a short memory. Shake it off. Move on.
You know what the happiest animal is, man?
What's that?
Goldfish. Be a goldfish, man.
No memory?
Shortest memory in the animal kingdom.
There you go. All right. Do we have any listener questions?
The only listener question is from friend of the podcast, Auburn Elvis.
All right, hold on then.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Auburn Elvis.
It's more build up than this question justifies.
All right. Well, it's probably our last segment here, so let's get it done and wrap it up. What we got?
It says, so guys, anything interesting happening in college football lately?
Well, other than us missing the guess the game.
I want to know if you're a listener and you got that one right. I want to know.
Yeah. That's a great question. Who got it right? That would really be.
We missed it.
Yeah. Oh, I missed a while ago, and when Coach Snyder was talking about the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
I've had that button on this board for 9 years and haven't used it in years. I don't know how.
Gotta bring that one back.
Got to bring it back. Yeah. All right. Awesome. So. Yeah, well, I guess we kind of covered his question in the early part, but yeah, between the Supreme Court and the everything else. Hmm.
The only other feedback, it's not really a question, but after last week's discussion of the running backs, Carl Von Drunker on Twitter said that he really strongly felt that the injury to Kerryon Johnson in the 2017 season was a cheap shot.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that when he got hit trying to get in the end zone, though, in the corner of the end zone? When he was diving for the, I feel like he was trying to get in to score at the end, and the Alabama player like hit him really hard in the shoulder, and that was pretty much it for his shoulder for the year. Yeah. Well, anything Alabama does is a cheap shot because they're cheap punk. So I accept it. I'll allow it. I accept it. All right. I don't think we have any around the SEC that we haven't already talked about. So I think we're going to get on out of here. Any last thoughts?
I would just want to say in the pre-internet era, when I saw college football magazines on the shelf in the grocery store, drugstore, bookstore, whatever, it meant the college football season was on the horizon.
Yeah.
That it was the long off season was almost over. So it's the kind of the first blade of grass poking up through the winter snow. It's coming.
The demise of the summer and the returning of the fall and the flipping of the pages of the Phil Steele magazine meant that all the world was right and everything was about to get back to normal again. And of all times, John, after what we've been through for the last year and a half or whatever, we need us some nice, normal times to come back, and I'm looking forward to them.
Amen.
All right. Well, folks, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.